Asphalt. As. Possible. So I have to discuss this basic set of variables, and these will be holonomies and fluxes. And yesterday I also tried to motivate that you need to smear these things, your fields over your manifold, and for reasons of getting a diffeomorphism covariant or invariant definition of these things, this needs to be, smeared over. Since you have only two dimensions in your spatial manifold, and you need to basically add up the smearing here and here to two, you can either try 2 plus 0 or 1 plus 1, and it happens that this will be smeared over one dimensions, and this will be also smeared over one dimensions. So we had this argument yesterday. And wait, holonomy. Holonomy. And holonomies indeed are parallel transports along curves. So a curve is a one-dimensional thing. And once we have that, this will give us a beautiful algebra. And it's actually the algebra which is the same as for a certain phase space, which is called the cotangent bundle of SU2. So I am not going to explain what the cotangent bundle of SU2 is, but luckily we know how to quantize this thing, so we will just quantize this system. But you see that we will have to discuss SU2 and the rotation group. I'm not sure how much you know about that, and I hope you have heard of the angular momentum and angular momentum operators before. So I will basically, you don't need to know it now, but it's a bit easier if you heard of that. So because we will actually get the system of lots of angular momentum, momenta, coupled to each other. So this basically will allow us to quantize one edge. And indeed, this will be our kinematical Hilbert space. If you take lots of edges, you have to tensor these things together. And there are edges. The edges, they can meet in vertices, and the vertices will actually stand for triangles. And so the next step we are going to do is to deal with the Gauss constraints. So we will apply delta G. That's a G, the ingenious trick I told you. And that will give us quantization of a triangle. And as we will see, the Gauss constraint, you know in electrodynamics has a certain meaning. It means that the flux, the net flux through a region is zero. And here, this meaning, net flux through the region is zero, will mean that the triangle is a closed triangle, that the edges, meet again in a vertex, go around and meet again. And the last constraint, is the flatness constraint. And that brings us already to three dimensions, because flatness told you is dynamics. And guess we do this ingenious trick. We take the delta of our curvature operator. And that will give us a quantization of a tetrahedron. So it's an edge triangle and a tetrahedron. And that's what I told you at some point, that you get the 6J. Okay. So that will be the plan for the next several lectures. And I will be replaced on Monday and Tuesday by somebody who probably will give you the high points of this plan. and I guess, yeah, I have to start with holonomies. Yeah. Sorry, I don't understand you. Can you speak?
When you're talking about the cotangent bundle on SU2, are you viewing SU2 as a free sphere, or are you talking about the collection of Lie algebras transported around the sphere?
I will explain that in a minute. What I mean, SU2 is a group. And so this is a cotangent bundle. That means, you know, you take the Lie algebra at the identity is what you said, and you transport it to every point. Then you get a fiber bundle. But we are not going to use that. You don't need to know it. It's good if you know it, but you don't need to know it for this lecture. okay. It actually takes a dual of the Lie algebra. Sorry. That is the star. Yeah, so we have to start with holonomies, and I have to tell you what these are and what these parallel transport objects are these parallel transporting, and it's most conveniently formulated in the language of Lie algebra valued forms. So I'm not going to explain these things, you know, in principle fiber bundles and these things. But we just will basically learn that by taking care of this index, of the internal index, and I introduce this internal index, I, which was going from 1 to 3, and we have seen that this internal index transforms with respect to rotations, which are called SO3. So in the sense that if you had an object, for instance, a co-triad, and we wanted to transform the co-triad, E prime, J prime, A, then this would be the rotation applied to this thing. rotation matrix, the standard three cross three rotation matrix. And yeah, I don't think we will ever need this expression, except for some exercise. Now I write to the general rotation matrix. So these are the matrix elements of a rotation matrix. And you might have heard that this is the vector representation of SO3 is the spin one representation of SO3 or SO2. So this is an alpha. So this is a rotation around a normal, which is supposed to be actually normalized, so it has norm one, and this is our rotation angle. So the normal, we can, it's a vector in R3, which is normalized. So the normal is an element of the two sphere, S2. And we have this rotation angle. And typically, this rotation angle runs from 0 to 2 pi. A priori, but now this is a full rotation around a normal n, but you can actually choose. Let me avoid. You rotate around n with a rotation angle alpha, and you can rotate from 0 to 2 pi. But you can also rotate around minus n. And then you can see that you get a minus n here, which you can put into the sinus of alpha. So if you rotate around minus n, this is equivalent to having a minus alpha, which is equivalent to having 2 pi minus alpha. So if you don't want to restrict this S2, we have to choose this to be from 0 to pi. And then there's a slight subtlety for alpha exactly equal pi. This is basically you do this with your vector. You rotate by 180 degrees. And this you can do with minus the normal and the normal. And so for alpha equal to pi, we have to identify antipodal points on S2. That means just that, you know, n should be equivalent to minus n, but this happens only for alpha equal to pi. And then you can make from this, this describes actually a certain manifold. which I will not go into it because we won't need it. But this is a so-called group manifold. And as you learned in general relativity, you can do lots of stuff and with group manifolds. And also with Lie groups and these group manifolds, you can define lots of nice stuff and matrix and so on. And at some point, we will need an invariant measure actually on this group manifold, which comes from a so-called invariant metric. So this is SO3. And in quantum field theory, might have learned that there is spin 1/2, and that this comes from the so-called covering group of SO3, which is called SU2. Special unitary matrices. So these are special means, special determinant is equal to 1, and unitary means unitary. And these, the 2 is 2 by 2. And indeed, you can write all these matrices in this form. And then it turns out that you can write all these matrices as an exponential alpha, an angle alpha, our normal n, and matrices Tj So these will actually form our Lie algebra basis. If you don't know what a Lie algebra is, don't panic. I don't think you need to know it now. But these will be basically the angular momentum operators. And here Tj is -1/2 the Pauli matrices. And I think this is the tutorial today. These Pauli matrices, you know, square to something simple. If you take the square of a Pauli matrix, it's easy to calculate. So do you know what the Pauli matrices are, or do you have to write them? Okay. And this allows you to express the exponential, because it's just the sum over all kind of all powers of these things. And you find that this is 1 cosine of alpha 1/2 minus I n j sigma j. The sinus of alpha 1/2, and you notice that now we have alpha 1/2 appearing. So indeed, now we have to choose alpha going from 0 to 2 pi, but n is still in S2. And if you choose alpha equal to 2 pi here, you get basically 0 here and -1 here. So this gives you a minus the identity, whereas if you choose alpha equal to 2 pi here, this gives you just the identity. And indeed, as we will see, it really is the case that for every rotation here, you get two rotations here. And this is by associating the alphas to each other. But you can always map two alphas here to these alphas, to one of these alphas. OK. So this actually defines you a three sphere as three. Okay, and then there's an equation which you have seen, yeah?
Sorry, the tj is minus half or minus?
Minus I.
Minus I, okay.
Half sigma j.
Thank you.
So in quantum field theory, if you discussed, you should have discussed the spin 1/2. And indeed, this will be the spin 1/2 representation, also called, you know, fundamental representation, because this is how SU2 is defined, so as 2×2 matrices. Whereas this is a fundamental representation of SO3 because it's defined as 3 times 3 in 3 space. Again, what I'm writing you now is that if you take 2 spin 1/2, you get spin 1 plus spin 0, actually. So we will not care about the spin 0 part. And this thing, this identification of SO3 and SU2 comes from the following identity. You take the rotation associated to an element G, and that means that, you know, you take basically associated means you take the same alpha and n to coincide. You apply it, so this is a 3 times, this is an index running from 1 to 3. This is an index running from 1 to 3, but these are 2×2 matrices. So you get a certain 2×2 matrix. And this is given by the following 2×2 matrix. You take the product, the inverse of G, times your generator TK, so here is K, times G, and that is actually the so-called adjoint representation of the group SU2. And this, again, We have seen it actually already in quantum field theory, but for the Lorentz group, which is just a more complicated version of the rotation group, as you can guess. and you will see it again in the tutorial. And we have these relations, so that means, you know, assume we have a vector which comes with an index k. So now we form the following 2x2 matrix. We take our 2x2 matrix TL, rotate it with R, and contract it with a vector VK. And then I apply these relations. And get basically this equation. And this tells me that I can basically intertwine the following thing. So I can first rotate a vector in my 3 space and then form a contraction with my basis here, Tj. Or I can first contract and then transform in the joint representation. Actually, we will later see again. This operation is called an intertwiner, and we will see it, I don't know, in five lectures or something, we will need an intertwiner. Yeah?
Why did it become G, G inverse on the right hand?
So because here, instead of R, I apply it to V, and then I sum over this index. That means transposing the rotation matrix. If you transpose a rotation, you get an inverse. So this leads to R minus one. And then I never told you what the representation is, but I used the representation property that RG is equal to R minus 1, no, R. The inverse of R RG inverse is equal to R of G minus 1. So we can identify R3 with SU2, with SU2. Okay, that is all what you need, that SU2 is, you know, the space spent, the vector space which you get by taking all combination of TJs. Equal 1, 2, 3. So if you take it as real vector space, you take all real coefficients. You can also take it as complex vector space. And that is the Lie algebra of SU2, and it's basically 3 numbers which you get here, and this is also vector space, you get 3 numbers. So we have actually identified this with each other. And we have seen that basically the SO3 rotations on this space go over to the joint representation here. And we can go back to what we had several lectures ago. And we had all these objects which had an internal index. So what I do here is I take a vector of vj there, and I contract it with my tj, and this is now a 2 times 2 matrix. But again, we will never use very much that these are 2 by 2 matrices, it's just that this is a basis. So now, we can introduce Lie algebra valued thingies. Objects for everything, for every object which was carrying an internal index I. And we had, in particular, we had the connection. This now, I write as this thing, and that is Lie algebra valued. So if you take this to be certain numbers and multiply it with your Lie algebra basis, you get an element of your Lie algebra. And to make a, to save on writing indices, this is defined as my connection without an index. And you could write it boldface or something, which is a bit difficult on the blackboard, so I'm not going to do that. So you have to remember that, you have to remember whether objects are Lie algebra valued or not. But from now on, if there's no index, it will be typically Lie algebra valued, and if there's an index, it means this component here of A of in this Lie algebra basis. So we had also the curvature. And we do the same. And then we had, say, these things. I can also put an index up here. So also for the t's, it will sometimes happen that I write the index upstairs. Again, this is, raising and lowering with the Kronecker delta. you won't use that much. This flux, actually. And having done that, we can now write our transformation rules under rotation. And now, actually, these things transform under SU2. For instance, mistake in script. For the triads, these really rotate where you could rotate the internal index, and now according to this. Also, you can remember, as a hint, you can maybe think about that, because that will might be a bit confusing, but it will appear several times. You have to put the G's in a certain order to get the group representation property. So it has to be from from the left always with g and from the right with g minus 1, if you define that as your representation. Of course, you can multiply, you can define the action with respect to g minus 1, and then it's just g minus 1 g. But if you really want to have that r g1 g2 is r g1 g2, you have to do that in this way. And you can try to figure out why this is. And sometimes it's a bit confusing, but there's a reason why it isn't in this way. So we get this thing, and we get it also for the curvature. Sorry, it's not equal, but it transforms this way. And how does the connection transform? Is it a vector? Has an index? It's not a vector. Levi-Civita symbols in general relativity are also not tensors. So you get, and you might remember that transforming a connection, you get always a so-called affine term or an homogeneous term. And if you go back to our formulas of how omega transforms and translate everything, you get the following thing, that this connection transforms, you know, one part like a vector, but you get this inhomogeneous term. And this is a 2x2 matrix. You apply the partial derivative in each matrix element. Actually, you first take the inverse and apply the matrix element in every, the partial derivative in every entry. And then you multiply with g again. So all many operations, you know, we will have matrices, and many operations will basically have, you have to read them as applying to every matrix element this operation, and one of them is basically taking this partial derivative. And this is equal to minus g, because it's basically that this is the derivative of 1 is 0. And great, so actually this connection, now I have this connection, which before was ensuring our parallel transport of vectors. So now we can actually parallel transport Lie algebra elements around. And we are going to do that now and transport Lie algebra elements around. But I have to tell you how you do that and how you define this parallel transport. I'm still here. So this is, so I use some conventions to make it consistent with everything, what we have told so far. So parallel transport, if you would have R3, you would basically rotate, you know, you have an object Vj sitting here, and then you want to transport it to some other point, and then you would rotate that to V prime at this point by, and you know, since we are in SO3, by applying a rotation. We call it gamma. And this rotation would depend on the connection and your choice of curve gamma. And this is if you take Vg. Now we had basically V is out an index. So V at the end point, at some point, so a curve means that it's a map from the interval, in this case 0, 1, it's a finite curve, to your manifold. And S is this parameter. So if you pick, if you take the Lie algebra element, if you take the Lie algebra valued object here, we have seen that it should transform in the joint representation. That means I have to expect that this is a group element in SU2. And I have to take it in the joint representation. And that will be my holonomy. Okay. And now is the question, how do we determine the holonomy? And as in general relativity, you learn parallel transport. As you want to parallel transport along a curve, as parallel as possible. And as parallel as possible was basically the covariant derivative applied to your vector has to vanish along the curve. I introduced you the covariant derivative in coordinates some time ago. Let me check. I don't have this part of the script in Genius. So you should actually check it in your script. But if I remember correctly, this was epsilon jkl a l. In coordinates, in components, and again, if you translate it to Lie algebra valued objects, you will find that this is given by, you know, partial derivative. That's not very surprising. Plus, so we now have these Lie algebra valued objects, which I told you are actually the angular momentum. And indeed, you might remember that also this Pauli matrices had something to do with the angular momentum. And if you take the commutator of these things, it gives you an epsilon. Ah. And so what happens is that this epsilon can be absorbed in a commutator. Okay, so it's a straightforward calculation to do. So one step, if you put here again, if you expand everything again in TJs, you know, put VJ, TJ, put AA, TJ, VJ, VK, TK, and then you get basically the commutator of two T's, which gives you this epsilon. So it's not extremely mysterious, I hope. And what you want to have for a parallel transported matrix, transported object, is that if you take the covariant derivative along the curve, so gamma dot A is, so this comes with some coordinate, is the tangent vector of this curve, then you want this to be zero. And we just defined V of S as H of S, V of zero, which I will just call V, H of S minus one. Okay. So we just, what we are going to do now is, let's see what this equation tells us. This has to be zero, this derivative. And so let's do that. So we first get basically the derivative of our parallel transport matrix HS with respect to the parameter. And that gives us this derivative contraction with gamma dot. Minus H. S V this part, so this is a partial derivative contracted with gamma dot here. It's this partial derivative contracted with gamma dot. And that gives you the total derivative of the Solomi along the curve. And now we have to also write all these terms. And I write you explicitly the commutator. B H S minus one. So we have A first and then V. And here we have V first and then we have gamma dot A. Yeah, so this is a commutator of A with V parallel transported. An index here, so and this index is contracted with k dot a. So we get this equation. Yeah.
What happened to the term d? Partial derivatives.
The partial derivatives are here.
But none of them matter. So v is a constant.
No, sorry. Yeah. So v is constant. V constant is v at zero. So, you know, it's constant object. And V of S is, so the only non-constant part is in these holonomies. So that's why you get only these derivatives of the holonomies here. Yeah. And, again, I think this, David wanted to put it as homework. So that you get accustomed more to the thing. Actually, we will never calculate explicitly what a holonomy is. You only need to understand the concept of this holonomy. Now, if you take this equation, define and check, you know, what could be a solution for your holonomy, defining equation, then you get the so-called defining equation for holonomy. Let me tell you that everyone defines it in a different way. Unfortunately. Because people want to have, you know, different ways of how you compose edges, these holonomies, and have different signs. And so I define it in this way. And that results in a lot of conventions about other things, where, again, different people might have different signs. Mostly it's about signs. So you get as equation this thing. And the initial condition is, of course, that the holonomy at the starting point of your gamma, curve gamma has to be the unit matrix 1. And you see, for instance, if this is satisfied, you can replace this by minus gamma dot A HS, and that kills this term. And it's easy to figure out that, you know, taking care that this is a derivative of the inverse and rewriting it as a derivative of the matrix itself again, it kills this other term. So we had this a minute ago, what you do, how you derive the inverse of a matrix. This is the defining differential equation of the holonomy. And this is like the Levi-Civita condition. The only problem is now you have Lie algebra valued objects which don't commute. And I guess that is a homework. Was that the homework to show that this is the solution? I think so. You know, and this, you also, you see basically it says the derivative of my holonomy is equal to Yes, something here, which is not a constant, times my holonomy. So it's basically something which looks like the exponential. And it's the so-called path-ordered exponential. So I define you the symbol in a minute. The last thing I will do in this lecture so path ordering, I actually hoped you had that in quantum field theory. Actually, you have that also appearing in quantum mechanics and quantum field theory. I will define you basically this object, p exponential minus a. So actually, I use the abbreviated notion there because a is a one form. It means AA gamma dot A ds over gamma. And it is a sum, as you can guess from the exponential. And you have minus 1 over n. And one of these things is you don't have 1 over n faculty, because that factor is absorbed in these, how you choose these integration boundaries. And here important is that you don't integrate all variables from 1 to s, but you choose these integrations always such so that s n minus 1 is only integrated up to sn, which means that s of n is always big, that s n minus 1 is always bigger than sn, and so on. Guess we have it until S1. So we do that. Apparently, I got tired of that. Starting with S1, which runs to S2. And then, you know, that's where, so people differ, the different conventions, I didn't told you. The conventions differ by a minus sign and by the ordering of these terms upstairs, by the ordering of the right-hand side. And with my ordering, I have basically the late times to the left. But you might also define it in a different way, and then so path ordering always refers to some way. There's not really a predefined direction. So these matrices, you know, remember that these are matrices. They are all to be understood as AA contracted with gamma at this point, Sn, Sn, and they come in a time ordered fashion with the later times ordered to the left. Okay, and this basically, this ordering, what I don't have is my 1 over n faculty power factor, which which here is actually absorbed to by doing these funny integrations only to these upper boundaries. Okay. At some point, we will need that this also close holonomy encodes the curvature. I don't know whether this was part of the exercise. And this gives you the connection, the holonomies. You see it's something which is integrated over, it's a group element, and it's the connection smeared over a curve. So the only thing which we need is actually that it is a group element which is associated to a curve. And you can compose curves. Not very surprisingly, that somehow translates into composition of holonomies. And we will take this curve very small and get an edge, that group element associated to to a curve. Yes, I can put it. And tomorrow, I will introduce another object which will be also associated to a curve or an edge, and that will be the flux thing, flux operator, flux variable. Yeah. Okay. So if you have already known what a holonomy is, might have been quite boring today. But then we will have the flux tomorrow. And I hope I can tell you the Poisson brackets. Actually, the flux will be a bit easier. I only just need to define the flux. So this will be not so hard as this holonomy. Okay.